This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Congress is back in session this week. High on the agenda is renewal of key provisions of the Patriot Act. This controversial law was passed with bipartisan support shortly after September the 11th to expand the federal government's powers of surveillance while fighting the war on terrorism. Several of its thorniest provisions are set to expire soon if Congress fails to act, which means Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and FBI Director Robert Mueller were on Capitol Hill today to argue their case in a hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee. So what do you think about the future of the Patriot Act? Have your views on government surveillance changed since the law was enacted? As the war on terror continues, is this still a vital weapon in the fight against terrorism or an unnecessary invasion of privacy? Or maybe both. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. One portion of the bill set to expire involves the government's ability to use secret warrants to search records and documents, which critics have termed the library provision, and Attorney General Gonzalez testified about that this morning.
Although prosecutors have long been able to obtain library records in connection with a criminal investigation, I recognize that Section 215 may be the Act's most controversial provision, principally because of fears concerning the theoretical use of the provision to obtain library records. However, I can report that the Department has not sought a Section 215 order to obtain library or bookstore records, medical records, or gun sale records. Rather, the provision to date has been used only to obtain driver's license records, public accommodation records, apartment leasing records, credit card records, and subscriber information, such as names and addresses for telephone numbers, captured through court-authorized PIN register devices.
After listening to Attorney General Gonzalez, FBI Director Robert Mueller weighed in with his defense with another provision of the law, this one that allows intelligence agencies to share information.
The increased coordination and information sharing between intelligence and law enforcement agents has allowed the FBI to approach cases such as these as a single, integrated investigation that allows us to see the full picture, not separate pieces of a criminal case, separate pieces of an intelligence case, separate pieces of information. It allows us to work together to successfully bring together various pieces of information, regardless of whether it is in the field of counterintelligence, terrorism, or criminal, and enables us to depend on that free flow of information between respective investigations, investigators, and analysts to successfully perform our responsibilities.
FBI Director Robert Mueller in testimony earlier today before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Joining us now is NPR's Larry Abramson in Studio 3A, and he's been following these hearings. Always nice to have you on the program, Larry.
Thank you, Neil.
We mentioned those two issues specifically. Tell us, if you could, how many provisions are set to go out of existence, to sunset is the congressional terminology, unless Congress fails to renew them.
Well, acts
to renew them, excuse me.
Yeah, I count 14, but some of them are certain sections of one provision. So basically, it's a dozen more or less. And some of them are provisions that people have heard a lot about, like Section 215, which, as you said, is often referred to as the library provision, even though it actually gives the FBI access to records generally and doesn't really mention libraries or books in particular. Or, there are other provisions that are in the Patriot Act that are not going to expire and have become very controversial, such as the sneak and peek provision, as it's called, which allows a search without notice to the victim of the search. That will stay in, but it will remain controversial. So Congress has a chance to debate only particular portions of the law, some of which are so obscure I wouldn't even bore you with them.
Well, sneak and peek is neither obscure nor non-controversial, and
right.
Attorney General Gonzalez made some testimony about that measure in his testimony before the Judiciary Committee today. Let's listen.
Under Section 213, law enforcement must always provide notice to a person whose property is searched. A judge may allow that notice be temporarily delayed in a few circumstances, but that person will always receive notification. The Department uses this tool only where necessary. For instance, from the enactment of the Patriot Act through January 31, 2005, the Department used Section 213 to request approximately 155 delayed notice search warrants, which have been issued in terrorism, drug, murder, and other criminal investigations. We estimate this number represents less than 1/5 of 1% of all search warrants obtained by the department during this time.
And Larry, one of the things that the testimony today seemed to be saying is, look, in terms of the library, well, we haven't even used it. In terms of this provision, well, we hardly ever use it. Has anybody asked them why they need these provisions if they don't use them very much?
And in fact, they did. And Attorney General Gonzalez said, well, you know, just because, well, he used an example. He said, if a policeman has a gun for 15 years and never has to pull it out of his holster, you don't take it away just because he hasn't used it. And the idea is that there might come a day when law enforcement needs to search through library records because a terrorist, say, has been looking up books on how to make a dirty bomb or something like that, and we don't want to preclude ourselves from having that power. And he also noted, you know, that this power has been available to law enforcement in non-terror investigations in the past, so there's no reason why terror investigators ought to be disadvantaged. The key thing here is, you know, do you trust the government or not to abide by the promises that Attorney General Gonzalez is basically making here? He's saying, look, we're busy. We don't have any interest in looking through what kind of comic books you've been reading at the library, and we never will. But I think that the you know, skeptics will say, unless that is written into a statute, there's no reason to trust the government. They may some point in the future decide it is in their interest to go in there and start sifting through all of those records.
And indeed, that part about hearing responses from the government came up in questioning from the ranking Judiciary Committee member Patrick Leahy of Vermont, to voice concern about what he described as transparency.
I believe that many of us be willing to consider renewing some of the provisions that are subject to sunset. But you've got to have a sense of trust because of accountability from the department first. I would like to see more and more regular reporting. Now, part of the difficulty with conducting oversight is the length of time it takes to get any information
from those two witnesses.
Right. Well, and today we got a couple of numbers, you know, that the Think and Peek provision had been used, 155 times, I believe, since the law was passed. It takes many, many months for members of Congress to get those numbers out of the Department of Justice. And, of course, it doesn't tell them anything about how they were used, what the cases were, what the justification was for using it. In fact, it was discussed today that kind of information is only given to the Intelligence Committee, which means it can never be divulged to the public. So Senator Leahy has, this is kind of a common chorus for him to be complaining about the fact that a law that he wrote is a law that he can't learn anything about because the Justice Department has been so closed about it. Now, I will say that Attorney General Gonzalez came out with these statistics the day before the hearing, sort of a preemptive strike, but I think that some civil liberties groups saw it as a sign that he was going to be a little bit kinder and gentler in his approach to these issues than his predecessor, John Ashcroft, was.
Let's get some listeners on the line, and by the way, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, and Chris is calling from Kalamazoo in Michigan.
Hi. I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
In Kalamazoo, recently, we had a robbery of a bowling alley where somebody was murdered. And I know the defense lawyers personally, and the city government was able to somehow get the federal government to use a provision of the Patriot Act to search this guy's cell phone records. And I thought that part of the Patriot Act was that it wasn't to encourage normal crime, and just wanted comments as to what the reality of the situation is.
Larry?
Well, of course, I don't know about this particular bowling alley robbery, but it has come up over and over again that the Patriot Act has been used a lot against other crimes, for drug crimes, and there were lots of other examples that came up today. And the Department of Justice is quite unabashed about this. They're not ashamed or hiding the fact that they're using the Patriot Act to go after drug lords. They say that this is exactly what was intended, and their justification is, look, a lot of times these crimes are mixed. You have terrorists who use drugs to make money or even engage in, you know, illegal tobacco sales in order to raise money. So there's no reason why we should exclude terror investigations from these kinds of things. And but rightfully, you bring up this point because civil liberties groups have said the same thing that to the government, namely, you justified the need for this law by saying it's because of the threat of terror. It's because we're not just talking about one person's life or property. We're talking about potentially hundreds of thousands of lives being at stake. Why are you using it against average crimes? And in many cases, these crimes are not spectacular big mob robberies. They're, as you said, could be a bowling alley in this case.
Hmm. things of this nature just foster distrust of the government and makes it even harder to enact anything that's worthwhile. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Chris. And one thing he mentioned was cell phone records. There was a provision, as I remember, in the Act that said on one wiretap, the FBI could listen into all of your phones and your computer. Is this one of the provisions that would be sunsetted, to use the congressional word?
That's, I think, a Section 206, which is the Roving Surveillance Authority. It basically says that as you move from cell phone or, you know, from voice over IP phone to another phone, you don't have to get a new warrant for each of those searches, and that is a controversial provision. A lot of civil liberties groups think that it allows searching of many people, basically listening in on many people's conversations rather than just the target of the investigation. So it is something that Congress will have to examine and renew or allow to expire.
We're talking with NPR's Larry Abramson about hearings today before the Senate Judiciary Committee reconsidering the Patriot Act, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line, and this is Nick. Nick's calling from Wyoming.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting point. I'm a convicted felon. I've actually gotten a job with the Department of Interior, and I've also gotten a job with a fire department. And the problem that I have is, well, you work really hard to actually get somewhere. All of a sudden, someone just decides to start running background checks on people. They look and say, well, you've got this. How do you know? Or do you get the right to know if somebody's been looking into you and find out why? And then all of a sudden it scratches you and makes things worse on a lot of people. That when they bend it over backwards to help you out because you're straightening out your life, next thing you know, they do a background check and nobody knows why, but you're out of there now.
And your friend has got a visit from the FBI.
Not yet.
Yeah. I'm not sure Nick's question is exactly pertains to the Patriot Act, but
it is a problem, although I don't think it's a when he applied for that job, he probably signed a waiver saying that they could do background checks on him. That's generally what happens. And a lot of people have found that either parts of their past resurface or sometimes things they never did surface because the information on their criminal background record is inaccurate. So it is a more and more common problem as more and more jobs require some kind of background checks. I mean, you know, to be a luggage handler or something like that today, you have to go through a background check. But it's something that people are worried about that isn't a Patriot Act issue, although I think that does point to the fact that many civil liberties concerns extend well beyond this one particular law.
Nick, good luck.
Yeah, sir. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Sean. Sean's calling from Elkhart, Indiana.
Hi, I've actually just got a question. From what I heard with the Patriot Act, it was sort of passed really quickly. A lot of congressmen didn't really have time to completely read it and sort of push it off onto aides. I wondered if this time around a lot of these provisions are going to be closer scrutinized than they were in the past. I've looked at the document, and it's incredibly long and horribly complex, and I just wondered, like I said, if anybody was going to scrutinize it a little more this time around.
Yeah, I don't think Ernest Hemingway wrote it either. So, Larry, have members of Congress have plowed through this dense prose?
Well, sure. I mean, some of them are. The ones who are interested in it are plowing through it, you know, in great detail. Senator Leahy probably knows it by heart, and a few others are probably doing the same thing. They're going through it line by line. And in the case of this act, changes in individual words really mean a lot. They really stand for a lot. I think that it's fair to say, though, that in the weeks after September 11th, and we're talking about 6 weeks after September 11th that it took to pass the Patriot Act, that it was very difficult for members not only to read the whole act, but to reread the whole act as it was being renegotiated and rewritten day after day. It was very hard to figure out. Now, I'll also say, though, that a lot of people I've talked to who worked on the act say that some of these issues were under consideration for years, for decades, really, as the FBI constantly said, we need, for example, roving wiretap authority. Communications is changing. So they weren't brand new ideas. They were things that the law enforcement had been complaining about, and then they came to Congress and said, look, now you really have to give us this authority. So folks who were paying attention to communications issues, to searching issues, and to the world of terrorism probably knew more about this stuff than they're letting on now that it's become popular to criticize the Patriot Act.
Sean, thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
Larry, what's the political prospect at this point? Is there a coalition arrayed against? Is this the typical situation where you would have Democrats opposing and Republicans in favor?
Well, in this particular hearing, it was largely Democrats opposed and Republicans in favor of pointing out the virtues of the law. But actually, there are a number of members on the Judiciary Committee, a number of Republicans who have backed revisions to the law. And most of these are people like Idaho Senator Larry Craig, who is sort of the civil liberties Republican that have become more and more common. And we've seen the ACLU and these civil liberties-minded Republicans joining forces, and they're going to be introducing something called the SAFE Act tomorrow, which would rein in some of the Patriot Act's most controversial provisions. So it has created some new allies. It does create some new possibilities for changing the language of the law. But all the way through this, they're going to have to contend with an administration that basically has said that other than a few changes in language, we do not want this law revised in any way.
And what is the timetable? When do they have to act by?
They got to do something by December 31st, or all of these 14 or so provisions are going to expire. And I think, it's pretty much a given that they're going to do something. Whether or not they come up with something really dramatic is a good question. Civil liberties groups want this discussion to go well beyond the provisions that are going to expire. They want provisions that are not going to expire, such as the sneak and peek provision of the law. They want those things to be reined in. And so you're going to see a very complicated document appearing before December 31st, where you'll have to look at every dotted I and cross T to figure out exactly who won and who lost.
Well, we can't promise every member of Congress will read it. We can promise we're going to make Larry read it. Larry, thanks very much. Larry Abramson is a correspondent for NPR News and joined us here in Studio 3A. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.